Welcome to the Be the Adult podcast. Be the Adult is a nonprofit organization that provides blueprints for calm and effective parenting so that children can grow into their best selves. Because ultimately, we aren't raising children. We are raising little people who will one day be adults.
Hi, Nancy.
Hey, Marisol. How are you doing?
I am well. How are you?
Good, thank you.
I'm drinking from my Be the Adult mug today.
Oh, I see it.
You get your mugs?
What's that?
You get your mugs?
I did. They're fabulous. Yes.
We're obviously plugging our merchandise store as a reminder that we have one and that we are a nonprofit. So thank you for tuning in and listening to us. And also check out our merchandise store on our website, betheadult.org. Nancy, we're having one of the topics today that is my weakest link. I have before we start, do any of these topics age out? Because I want to age out of this particular topic.
I love it. I love your sense of humor. No, is that the right answer?
So let me tell the audience, today we're going to discuss create structure and hold me accountable. So I'll read from the book what this means, and then Nancy can tell us why it's so important.
Okay.
So from the perspective of the child, please establish daily routines, responsibilities, and chores for me that I'm able to handle and give me age-appropriate rules and consequences. Then praise me when I follow the rules and calmly enforce the consequences when I don't. Why? This helps me to feel secure because I know what is expected of me, and it teaches me to think ahead about the potential consequences before I make choices in my life.
So Marisol, if I can make up a story for a minute about what you said before you read from the book, I believe you, like most of us, or many of us, have a difficulty with the unknown. I mean, myself and most people I meet, you know, it's that fear of the unknown that keeps a lot of us stuck in many situations. And so that is something that will be around probably our lifetime, right? And so we need to learn how to help ourselves manage that. And so when we can give ourselves more of a sense of security in the present moment, right? We deal with change best when we have, when we know it's expected of us, when we have a solid foundation, when the change can, you know, more often than not occur in the context of a familiar routine. So, you know, what we're going to talk about with children today is kind of how to do that. But I appreciate you bringing that up, Marisol. I think it's important for all of us as adults, or as we try to adult, right, to keep these things in mind for ourselves. Is that fair, Marisol?
No, 100% fair. For me, this creating structure and holding me accountable as a parent has been probably the hardest one for me to practice, to really truly practice. I'm more of the, and I don't think I'm unique in this, but I feel like I could just do certain things better myself, faster, quicker, get to the, I didn't have the patience, I think, when my children were younger to establish this as well as I wish I had. And I see that now as they are in blossoming into adulthood. So I really hope that, you know, everyone understands, you know, to have grace for themselves, because I know this is when I have to have grace for myself. Literally this morning, I woke up and cleared the dishes of two of my children who are adults this morning. So full disclosure, this is not one that I'm super strong at.
Well, I think like most of us, I see our guest shaking her head, smiling. I see your energy. So I'm going to go ahead and introduce Deanna Leek. She was born in Raleigh, North Carolina, moved to Wilmington in 1997. She attended UNCW for undergraduate and graduate school and has 20 years experience in education at the elementary and middle school level. You've had many roles, worn many hats. She's been a teacher, an assistant principal, and is currently in her third year as principal of amazing school, Carolina Beach Elementary. Dan is married to Chuck Leek and proud mother, most importantly, to Colton and Craven, 10-year-old twin boys. Wow, you've had your hands full. How have you done all of this? Throughout her experience as an educator and a mom, she's a lifelong learner as she eagerly seeks out ways to positively, love that word, impact the lives of her children, both in school and in her home. So welcome. I'm so excited that you're here.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here. And it's actually funny, as you guys were plugging your merchandise, clearly I need a Be the Adult mug, because the mug I'm drinking out of this morning says, "I'm sorry, but I just can't adult today." And then on the inside, it says, "Probably not tomorrow either." So I read it behind my mug. Clearly I need to check out that merchandise of yours.
I think we'll put it on our list to send you one. So thank you. I appreciate that. And I appreciate you being here early on this Sunday morning. Thank you. I know you're super busy. So,
well, thank you for having me.
Yeah. So I thought having a principal for this topic would be perfect, because school is holding so much energy. I mean, it always does for most of us as parents, but especially now with so many things changing at home and at school, I thought it would be really great to get both perspectives as we talk about structure. And I know just that word right now is kind of elusive with what's going on in the world and the schools. But if it's all right, we'll just jump right in and just kind of get your thoughts about structure in general and the importance of establishing it and boundaries at home and at school. So wherever you want to start would be great. And we'll kind of jump in from there.
Well, one thing that I would speak to just in regards to structure and boundaries, again, whether it's at home or at school, is whether or not children realize this or are able to voice this or verbalize this, they really do want structure. They seek those boundaries. They want to know what's okay and what's not. They want to feel safe. They want to feel protected. They need to know what to expect out of their surroundings. And the best way for them to know what to expect out of their surroundings is for us to provide that structure and those boundaries for them, and to communicate our expectations, and to really be more proactive than reactive. Because when we are proactive in communicating our expectations and, again, just what to expect in their surroundings, then we're not spending so much time being reactive when they don't respond to those surroundings appropriately.
Really fits in with what we talk about getting ourselves regulated. So when in the moment they don't listen or the mirror clear their dishes from the sink, right, we can respond to them in a healthy way that models how we want them to respond to us too. So how do you see at school kind of the impact of structure, boundaries, consequences with kids? It's a broad question, I know. So whatever part of that you want to address.
And I'm going to answer that question a little bit differently than I think I would have this time last year.
Okay.
Because right now at school, we have more structure and processes and procedures that have been explicitly taught this year than ever before, because of the social distancing guidelines and the 3 W's and all of the practice that we've had to put into place as a result of COVID. Again, we've got more structure and more clearly communicated processes and procedures in place this year than we ever have before. And one thing that we have seen come out of that, that I don't know that we were actually expecting, is the disciplinary issues are exponentially lower across the county, K-12, than they ever have been before.
Wow.
At a point where we actually have a behavior specialist for the county. She's contracted out. And I mean, I've worked with her for years, and I just had a conversation with her last week, and she was like, "Deanna, I'm worried I might be out of a job soon." because there's just, the need is not nearly as prevalent as it has been before. Again, the need is not as prevalent as it has been in the past. We do understand that there are fewer children in the building, which might have something to do with that. But it's still, even though there's fewer children, they're still the same children that have been in our building every year before. And we've kind of hypothesized that one of the reasons for that decrease in disciplinary situations is because, again, we have been so intentional about clearly communicating those processes. We've talked about how to walk through the hallway, how to go to the bathroom, how to sit at their seat, what to do if they need to leave their seat. They need to put their mask, you know, if it's a mask break, they need to put their mask back on. And before they even get up out of their chair, every little process and procedure we have had to explicitly teach, which normally we do that in kindergarten.
Right.
And then we assume that they remember it every year after that. But this year we've done it K-12. And again, the discipline has decreased substantially. And I really do believe it's because we have been so intentional about communicating all of our expectations.
What I'm thinking about is in the home, right? The structure creates the safety because, and when kids feel safe, right, then they can focus their energy on being their best selves and they don't have to focus on testing the system, right? Uh-huh. Throwing those test ropes to get the adults, the teachers, the parent, to give them the structure they need to get the ground solid to stop shaking. So it sounds like proactively you've gotten the ground really solid and firm, uh-huh, which is awesome. And the kids can trust that. And they trust the teachers. They trust the system. They trust the process. And then they have the power. They feel empowered to really just focus on, you know, they have this sense of security. Mm-hmm. Well, what do I need to do? Oh, I need to do my math, or I need to read this book, or whatever it is. That's a beautiful consequence that's coming out of this.
It really, it's been a huge aha moment for all of us. And of course, you know, we all hope that the day will come sooner than later that we don't have to abide by all of the social distancing mandates that we have to abide by now. But there's still some things that we would want to replicate, you know, down the road when we do return to some sense of normalcy. And really just the lesson that we've learned from this is the extent to which children do benefit from that structure, those boundaries, and probably more importantly, very, very clearly communicating that structure and those boundaries and reinforcing, because we're reminding them constantly. And again, we've seen the benefits of that.
So I have a question. How do you suggest parents set appropriate structure, including routines, rules, and consequences for their kids? So from, you get to see a great age range.
Yeah. So, you know, one thing I would say is, again, going back to what I said at the beginning, trying to be more proactive than reactive. For instance, there's lots of great books out there that parents can read with their children. You know, one of our favorite books in my house, my boys were younger, was Hands Are Not for Hitting. And there's actually a really great book series. It's the Hands Are Not for Hitting. There's a book called Words Are Not for Hurting. Lots of different books in that series. But even when the boys were as young as 2-3 years old, we would read those books to them. And I thought they probably understood what we were talking about. But again, they were so young that I was just hoping that somewhere in their psyche, we were embedding these, you know, this mentality and the importance of kindness and of making good choices. And so that's where I would say that proactiveness would pay off, you know, to start having those conversations, even when you think that they may not fully understand those conversations. And then as they get older, in regards to those routines, those rules, and those consequences, just making sure that you're consistently talking with your children, you're involving them in the plan, you're working together to outline the expectations and those family rules. One thing we do try to do is give them choices whenever possible. So for instance, one of my boys' expectations is that they unload the dishwasher. Well, sometimes what we say is, would you like to unload the dishwasher before you shower or after you shower? So we're not asking them if they'll unload the dishwasher. We're giving them some choices about when they do it. So that's kind of giving them some control while still accomplishing what we expect out of them. I also know that in the book, they talk about giving them responsibilities or chores. And that we do think is very important. We think that it's important for the boys to have responsibilities, that, you know, you're part of this family. You're going to have responsibilities as part of this family. However, one thing that we've done recently is we have a chore chart. And so whenever we ask them to do something that is expected of them, they sign the chore chart, and each chore is worth some kind of monetary amount. And when I say monetary, I mean like 25 cents, 50 cents. And then over the course of the week, that money adds up. And then they're able to use that money. And there's very few things that we buy for them just outright. For instance, one of my boys wanted a Chromebook back in the spring. He used his own money to buy his Chromebook that he had earned through the chores that we expect of them. But the key to the chore chart is, again, because these are things that we expect them to do anyway. So if we ask them to do it and they do it willingly and kindly without arguing, then they sign the chore chart. If we ask them to do it and they argue with us, they still have to do it. They just don't get paid for it. So it's basically at that point, the choice we're giving them is to do the chore, you know, and be rewarded for it, or to do the chore without being rewarded. So giving them some choices. The other piece that I would say, as far as just age appropriate, especially when they're younger, is you definitely don't want to, at any age, engage in a power struggle with your child. And we really found that a timer was very helpful because a child can't argue with a timer. So rather than me saying, you know, Colton and Craven, it's time to go, when they're doing something that they're having fun doing, I would say, Colton and Craven, I'm going to set the timer for 2 minutes. When the timer goes off, it's time to go. And then they would hear the timer go off. And they knew, and then again, they could argue with me, but they can't argue with a timer. And so just trying to, again, be more proactive than reactive and put processes into place that are going to not lend itself to a power struggle.
That's awesome. I could see parents or hear them saying, but my kid will argue with the timer. So how I would answer that is, right, well, the timer can't argue back, right?
Right.
And that's how we get stuck because, right, the kids can't make us argue back, but we do, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we get sucked into those power struggles. You're right, that totally can derail the best of intentions, right? So I love that. You're making it as objective as possible for right. them to not feel shame from you that they're somehow not measuring up because they're not doing the dishes or leaving on time. So I love that.
Can I ask a follow-up question as a parent? Because I know this is true for myself and I've heard it many times from other people, is we'll start off with structure. We'll have a plan. We'll see something. We'll hear this podcast. We'll come up with a chore chart. We'll start it. We've got it going for about 2 weeks. And it just disappears. Like the parent, me, myself, not following through to make it a habit. What advice do you have or counseling do you have for that? Because I know that's very common.
So, I mean, for me, what I would say is, because for instance, the chore chart, we'll use that as an example. When we first started that, the boys were super excited about it. They were all about signing the chore chart. And then at the end of the week, we would count up the, and again, it's not a big monetary amount. It's small, but it's still something for them. And then they would be rewarded for their work. And then after a few weeks, month or two, they would just forget. They would still do the chore. They would just forget to sign the chart. But then at the end of the week, when it was time to add up their money, there was nothing to add up. And then whenever they wanted to buy something and they didn't have money to buy it. And again, there's very few things that we just buy for them outright. They They earn their money. They, if they want it, they take responsibility for it and they buy it. And once they saw that suddenly they didn't, they're doing the work, but they didn't have the reward and they weren't reaping the benefit, then it became valuable for them. And so that's what I would say is if whatever the process or procedure is, if you make it valuable for them, then it is probably going to be more likely to stick.
Mm-hmm. That's a great point. Yeah. Cause you sort of give them the ownership and the follow through. That's a great point.
Yeah. And then it becomes more of a natural consequence to
right
choice. Yeah. It's interesting. So Marisol, I was thinking about your dishes. Sorry to pick on you, what you were talking about at the beginning. But to kind of follow up on your question, I think it's even harder, or at least it was for myself, as kids get older, like teens, to really, you know, chore charts and things get, you know, a lot of times teenagers, if we use those, they think, well, I'm not a kid, you know, there's more pushback. Mm-hmm. So we have to get even more creative. And it's hard to navigate, I think, that period of time in our children's lives around this topic, but the stakes get even higher as our kids get older, right? Of the consequences of their choices and their actions. So I love what you were talking about, Deanna, about really having the child involved and kind of co-creating the responsibilities, roles, mm-hmm. consequences, because I think the more ownership a teen can have, the more they'll feel invested in it. And then they realize that they've helped choose the consequences. Mm-hmm. Like I'm thinking what we did with our children for driving. There are these wonderful driving contracts online that I found one, printed it, went through it first with my husband, tweaked it how it would fit for our family. And then I sat down with each child when it was time before they got their license and said to them, hey, you know, I said some positive things. And when we talked about trust, right, and the importance of us being able to trust them with this car, right, that was not theirs. They just had the privilege of. And so we got super clear, but going back to that being proactive that you were talking about, down to if you get a speeding ticket, if it's 5 miles, you know, you're speeding, or if it's 15, or, and so our children knew ahead of time exactly what was expected. They helped write it. They signed it. I love that, how you had your kids sign their chore charts. And then if one of them broke something, there's an infraction, because no kid's perfect, you just point to the contract. And you're like, oh yeah, so this happened. This is what the contract says, right? You know, I feel sad for you that you've lost the car now for a month. How is that for you? And so I'm seeing you smile, or Deanna.
No, I think that's great. My husband actually is a director of driver's ed. And so he would very much appreciate everything that you're saying right now.
Yeah, I just think it gets harder, Marisol, for all of us as our kids get older, because we don't want to treat them like children. However, they're not adults yet. They don't have their adult brain. We are still the parent guiding them. But we also...
I was also smiling because when you were talking about you can't argue with a timer, but you can, I would say that works all the way up till, much like you said, even when they're older, because you can't argue with a contract. I mean, they can, but the contract speaks for itself. So that's where you don't argue back.
In the school situation, are there things that you could, like tips you could give parents that really help their child be their best self and navigate the school situation when they get there? Because I always talk about how parents are the first authority figures in our kids' lives. And if they can't trust us that we're going to follow through with our word and that kind of thing, it's going to be even harder for the other authorities, the teachers, principal, coaches in their lives. So do you have any ideas for parents, things that you see that are just really helpful for children, or maybe things that really kind of consistently get in kids' way?
Yeah. So I'm going to start very simple. And this might be a personal thing, but my assumption is it's probably not. There is a drastic difference when a child is in my office, and I'm really thinking more back to my time at the middle school level. When a child was in my office And, you know, I was taught having a difficult conversation with them about some choice that they have had made. And they looked me in the eye and they used their manners. They said, please. They said, thank you. I am from the South. I love the yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. But again, that's very simple, but teaching them to, you know, how to treat adults with respect and how to use their manners, even when they're in an uncomfortable situation, there was something to be said about having that respect and those manners. So it's simple, but it's one of those habits. If you can create it, especially early on, it's going to stick and it will make a difference. On a broader level, what I would say is really just the importance of teaching your child to be accountable and to take responsibility for their choices. And that means, you know, owning their good choices and celebrating them and taking pride in them, but also taking responsibility for the bad choices that they make and learning from them and growing from them. And again, when that is instilled in the child, it is evident even when the child is not in your presence. And I, as the principal or the assistant principal, could always tell when that accountability had been instilled in the child. And that does start, I believe, in the home.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it starts with us modeling it, right?
Mm-hmm.
That when I make a mistake, like we all will, I model for my child that accountability piece. Hey, I made a mistake saying that I was going to throw your bike away if you broke curfew, mm-hmm. right? I'm really sorry. I was angry. I apologize for that. And what I really mean is that next time you choose to break curfew, you're choosing to have your bike taken away from you for 3 weeks. I get that about the using the manners because you feel more respected when they're interacting with you, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And that just sets for all of us, I think, a different tone when we're interacting with someone and we feel.
Right. Exactly.
That, yeah. So that too goes back to the home and how do we talk to our children? We need to talk to them the way we want to be spoken to. We need to treat them with respect. Even when we're angry, even when we're dysregulated, even when we're out of our resiliency zone, right? That's so hard, but continuing to practice. And then when we don't, we just own it and we're accountable for it. Like, that's all great. Anything else you wanted to add to this topic that we haven't talked about?
Again, I think what it all comes down to is it can be a big, scary world. And it is our job as the adult to create that protection around them. And the best way to do that is to provide them with boundaries and with structure and with expectations that they can count on.
You know, a lot of parents, how they handle the morning routine really determines the beginning of that child's day at school. Mm-hmm. And so I would encourage parents to look at having, like Deanna, you said, a proactive morning routine. What are the things that I can do for my child that my child can't do yet for him or herself? And what are the things that are age and developmentally appropriate that my child can handle? That I can give to my child can pack his backpack. My child can mm-hmm. pick from these three shelves what he's going to have for lunch, that kind of stuff. So they feel good about themselves, that we have confidence in them for the things that they can do. And then, again, keep going back to that proactive piece. When they have that structure, they know it's expected. It goes more smoothly in the morning, and then we can send them off to the bigger world, the scarier world, with a stronger foundation.
I remember
years past some advice, Nancy, that you gave me around this subject that I still remember it years later, which was as they were getting into the high school years, you know, I was very clear with them that, you know, they had one a semester to call me and say, I forgot something, could you come bring it to me? Or there was some ground rules that we went into high school with that really changed in our household for the better, the system. It gave them the boundary. They understood exactly what I was going to do versus maybe what I was doing in middle school, which was, you know, running around, dropping off shoes and things that they had forgotten. And the morning routines from, you know, grade school had fallen away. Middle school had happened and I had to kind of reset for high school. And this was one of the ones that you sat me down and gave me some really good advice to do for high school. And I remember that one because I had to use it. I was like, no, I already, you know, dropped off that English paper that you did, you know, 3 weeks ago. So you need to go have a conversation with your teacher. And those things have, you know, worked for their benefit.
So I love it. I love it. Well, I appreciate you following through with that. And you know, it helps them be able to predict how we're going to respond, right? Which gives them more trust and then helps bring their anxiety down. And again, they can focus on themselves. Dan, I'm going to throw one more question other that just kind of popped in my head based on what Marisol was saying. I know I've read a lot of articles, studies where kids get to college and they, you know, are lining up in the counseling center because they're anxious, because they're falling, because mm-hmm. their mom or dad or their caretaker, you know, best intentions kind of carried them through middle school, elementary school, high school. Do you have any thoughts on that? Kind of what you see?
You know, and I'm sure that you've read these articles as well. At one point, there was a term that they would reference as helicopter parents, you know, hovering over everything that the child's doing. Now that the most recent that I've heard is actually a lawnmower parent, where they're mowing down every obstacle in their way.
Oh, wow.
And what that is in turn creating is children who don't believe that they can conquer those obstacles themselves. And I do think that it can in turn impact their self-confidence and just their value in themselves. Although the parents are mowing down these obstacles with the best of intentions, mm-hmm. you know, the outcome of that is oftentimes negative. So that's where I would say is just to kind of, and I think that the example you gave, Marisol, is a great example. While it may be our nature to mow down those challenges, those obstacles, the long-term consequences of that may be much more devastating than the short term of your child having to have a difficult conversation with their teacher. And my guess is your child probably learned something from that. I'm a huge fan of natural consequences. I would always prefer natural consequences over consequences that I instill any day, because I think that the natural consequences are the ones that we really learn from. And so I think that, you know, as parents, sometimes allowing those natural consequences can go a long way, even though we want to mow it down and make it easy for our children. Again, the long-term results of that can be devastating.
Yeah, absolutely. I gave that high school example specifically for two reasons. One, to give hope to anyone who, like me, this is their weakest link, that you can reset at any point. And two is I saw it specifically with my children, because especially in those high school years as a parent, you get kind of frantic wanting to lawn mow them into a good college. But stepping back and letting them fail, basically, you know, these little failures in high school, which turn into tough conversations with their teachers, reorganizing their schedule, whatever it is that they needed to do, has worked out beautifully in as they graduated and flew off. You know, I saw it happen. So it's hard. You know, I think as a parent, we do, our instinct is to protect them and shield them and try to band-aid everything for them. But if you kind of step away and let that natural consequence happen, the next time it happens, a situation like that happens, they're better prepared to handle it.
Absolutely. Yeah, they get stronger, right? They get more self-aware, and then and they build their inner strength and their resiliency, their awareness of themselves and the world. I got chills when you said lawnmower. I hadn't heard that. Like helicopters, like, okay, you know, parents over the child, like that's, you know, we know that's not so helpful. But the lawnmower, that image in my brain is like, whoa. So I appreciate you sharing that. Thank you. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate the perspective that you bring to our discussion.
Of course. Thank you for having me. And thank you for all of your insight as well.
Yeah, thank you for all the being on the front lines during COVID and for your courage and your leadership and your grace. And I know many people who you lead, and you have figured out the right recipe for that. So, and all those children are benefiting from it. So thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
And thank you to our listeners for checking out the Be the Adult podcast one more time. We have some exciting guests coming up, and we really do appreciate everyone downloading an episode, sharing, subscribing, and sharing our mission, which is to be the adult for your child. Thank you, Nancy.
Thank you, Marisol. Thank you, Deanna.
Thank you.